Species.
Unite.
Species.
Unite.
There's some reality TV show where, like, there's a bunch of people trying to survive on an island. You don't want to be the vegan on that island because you're definitely going to get kicked off probably in the second episode because everyone's going to be like, nope, because you won't take one for the team because you're not going to kill that possum.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Carrie Packwood Freeman. Carrie is an associate professor of communications at Georgia State University. She's a critical cultural studies media researcher and has published in over 20 scholarly books and journals. And she is co-author of Animals and Media, a style guideline web resource for media professionals. Carrie and I met because we're part of a group calling for an update to the Associated Press style book, recommending the use of personal pronouns for non-human animals. Carrie is here today to talk about what that means, why it's so important that we change the way that we talk about animals in the press, in the media, and in regular, everyday conversation. Carrie, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm really pleased to be here. I love this podcast.
There's so many things I want to talk about, but before we get there, I would like to go back and learn a little bit about you, because you've been in animal rights movement since the 90s. You've been, you're old school.
That's right.
And like, how did this start? Did you grow up around animals? Were you vegan young?
All of that sounds awesome. And I wish I was one of those children that you hear about that tells their parents, like, forget it, we're not eating meat anymore because we're not putting animals in the oven. But I know I wasn't that nice as a kid. I mean, I liked animals, but I didn't make the connection and my parents didn't either. I mean, we had cats, but we didn't stop eating animals. It really wasn't until I went off to the University of Florida and then there was a girl who was vegan on my dorm floor. I don't think I knew anybody who, you know, was vegan before that time. She took me to a Students for the Ethical Treatment of Animals meeting that was at University of Florida. So this would have been like in 1989, 1990. And that really was very eye-opening for me. It's horrifying, but it's also extremely motivating in a way, like you're so outraged that you feel like you really need to do something. I just kind of said to myself, like, okay, when I graduate, I'm going to go vegetarian. And so that's what I did. I cut out certain animals at a time, the land animals, then the birds, and then the fish, and did that for a few years. And then I got an invitation to do an internship at PETA. It was a good push for me, you know, get rid of my leather shoes and your leather watch band and like all that, and to start to go vegan at the time. I had moved to South Florida, and so it wasn't like a very vegan friendly place in Fort Myers, Florida at the time. However, I ended up starting a vegetarian society there. I ran it for about 4 years.
So you kind of went full in once you started this thing in Florida.
I was really convinced. If you want to think about it, people have been vegetarian for centuries, right?
Yes.
And then there's even just the arguments that humans initially weren't really meat eaters to begin with. So, you know, that even though we like to have this caveman mentality that we've always been killing animals, it's probably not. For most of our history, we were probably plant eaters.
So now you do 4 years running the society in Florida, the Vegetarian Society.
Yeah.
And do you know now that this, your life is going to be connected to this kind of work?
Oh, yeah. I think for those of us that get really into animal rights, it's similar to feminism and many other types of justice advocacy. It really changes your whole outlook. You suddenly just look at the world and you see all the injustice everywhere and you see the objectification. And that was my next step, was going to grad school. I was thinking, well, either I need to go work for an animal rights organization or I can study these things. I'm really interested in like the cultural route to change or the popular culture and the way we represent these issues. When I did start in communication, it wasn't an obvious fit because back in the day, and really maybe even a lot now, when you were reading animal rights books, they were written by philosophers or maybe legal scholars. And so there wasn't a lot in academia. It was, you didn't know where you should go to get a degree. So I just said, well, okay, media makes sense. I'll learn to be a media scholar. And then the topic I'll choose to write about is animals. So even though a lot of my professors, they didn't write on that topic, they just taught me to be a good researcher. And then I, you know, wrote about animals.
When did animals and media start?
That was in 2014 that Dr. Deborah Merskin and I, she was my dissertation advisor from University of Oregon, and we both were vegetarians and communication media scholars. And so we tried to take some of the scholarship that we were publishing in academic journals and just translate it to the practical realm and say, here's a website. If you're a journalist, here's some guidelines to be friendlier and more accurate in your representation of other animals. And we also have guidelines for people who do advertising, people in public relations, and then a pretty extensive outline of guidelines for the entertainment media, television and movies. You know, there's a lot of guides out there for the media on how to be more thoughtful representations of human minority groups who have been represented poorly or not represented at all, misrepresented. That was kind of the inspiration for this.
What were you noticing and what were like gaping holes that were happening and are happening in journalism and media especially?
From a broad standpoint, there's just the fact that we need to include the animal perspective more and not just like when they're a problem, but just the idea that they deserve to be sources of news. The idea is that they are affected by the events that are happening that are newsworthy. Somebody needs to bring in that perspective of all the other animals besides just the human animal.
Will you give an example of that, getting an animal's perspective, like a situation where it happens all the time?
A lot of times it's also just asking the news to bring in the animal's perspective. Even when they're talking about animal issues, they often are not talking about the animals. They're talking about us. Back when I did my master's thesis, it was about news coverage of farmed animals. So at University of Georgia in the early 2000s, there was the foot and mouth disease crisis and kind of mad cow was an issue. Over in England, they were just like murdering all these cows and sheep because of foot and mouth disease. The journalists were just standing there with the microphone in front of a mass grave and, you know, talking about it as an economic issue or maybe a public health issue. But it's also just an injustice issue. So that's what we're also asking, is for journalists to think of them as fellow sentient beings, because every time journalists leave out the non-human animals perspective, it's just like saying, well, it just doesn't matter. They're just food objects. So, you know, we might as well kill them, because if we can't eat them and make money off them because they've got this kind of disease, then let's just murder them. Who cares? If we just let that go without saying anything about it, that just normalizes the fact that we're mass producing animals.
What's been some of the response, you know, when journalists come and look at your website?
I thought I would hear a lot of criticism, and I don't, because it probably just gets ignored. Because you're always able to ignore animal issues, right? You get a pass on doing that. Like, if you want to just ignore it, usually no one's going to like say anything to you. I think that it's not getting the criticisms I thought it would, because also Deb Merskin and I, we put this together, we didn't just do it as a soft animal welfare kind of thing. No, we do say that we all should be critiquing our use of animals, not just saying, oh, look, let's get a camera in there to show how animals are mistreated by industry, but let's have narratives in journalism that actually question whether or not we should be eating animals.
Which I think is going to happen. I mean, I think it is. I think people will be using your website more and more, you know, as the
years. That's right.
No, because like, this is where the world's going.
At the time when it came out in 2014, and I think since then we've, you know, sent press releases out just to let all the major media organizations know about it. But I think really our main strategy is to get people who care about animals, and whether you're in the media or not, when you write a letter to the editor or you send a note to a company because you notice they used animals in their advertising, and you want to say whether that's positive or negative, now you could go to the animalsandmedia.org site and give your letter a little bit more weight and credibility to say, here's a specific guideline I think it would benefit you to follow and take seriously. So I really think that's one of the main ways that other media is going to hear about this. If we as animal advocates actually reach out and say, there's something you left out of this story. Here's some guidelines on fair incorporation of animal rights perspectives, or bringing in an animal ethologist to talk about the way the animals were communicating about their captivity. I think we as animal activists can ask journalists to do this.
Since you started and got involved in all of this, and I'm sure you were noticing even before how animals were portrayed in media and journalism, but so over the past couple decades, have you seen a shift in how they are portrayed?
One of the most obvious is the term vegan, and the notion of being vegan is much more mainstream now. Back in the 90s or in the early 2000s, you didn't even really use the word vegan. You said vegetarian, and then you meant vegan. Like, because that's what I did my dissertation on animal rights advocacy messages for veganism. So like all the Why Vegan pamphlets and t-shirts and websites, Go Veg websites. That was probably more around 2006 or 7. All the animal rights organizations were still saying vegetarian, but they meant vegan, because when you looked at the recipes in the booklet, they were all vegan. I feel like that we've actually mainstreamed the word vegan.
Vegan had such a bad rap, right?
Like, yeah.
I remember I was vegetarian in high school, I still thought vegans were weird. That's what you heard. I didn't know any vegetarians, or it was just so not in my face. And I was like 13. But then people would say to me, you know, they've talked to me about it, like adults, and they would all tell me vegans are weird. And like, you know, because vegans had a really bad rap back then, you know, in the sense of people were kind of afraid of it all. Whereas now it's like plant-based, it's very embraced, and the word doesn't have negative connotations.
Yeah. I mean, it probably still does to some extent, certainly in certain circles. And I think plant-based has become the new term, because also plants is not a very loaded term, unlike soy or tofu. We're still the butt of some jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if there's some reality TV show where like there's a bunch of people trying to survive on an island. You don't want to be the vegan on that island, because you're definitely going to get kicked off probably in the second episode, because everyone's going to be like, nope. Because you won't take one for the team, because you're not going to kill that possum. But then you have somebody like Lisa Simpson, which one of the best things that ever happened was Paul McCartney insisting that Lisa Simpson on The Simpsons go vegetarian so that he would appear on The Simpsons. And then she stayed vegetarian forever. And she's the best, like smartest, most noble character on the show.
Animals and Media and In Defense of Animals are doing a partnership right now.
Yeah.
Will you talk about that and what you're asking the AP to do?
Alicia from the In Defense of Animals group came to me and Deb Merskin and was saying that they were thinking at In Defense of Animals to ask the Associated Press to update its style guidelines related to the way they talk about non-human animals. And the Associated Press creates a style guideline that is the main thing that journalists and even PR people use for formatting the way they talk about anything in their writing. Like, they have a whole paragraph on how you should treat animals and talk about them. One of the problems with it is that it instructs journalists that you only have to bother with saying he or she related to an animal if they have a name or you know them. So in that case, I feel like they're just privileging your kind of popular companion animal, but even not a stray dog, but only somebody's dog who has a name. Because, you know, most of the time when we talk about non-human animals, we don't know their sex, but it is just the wrong word because it's inanimate. And I know it's a problem. It's a problem for humans too, that we do not have a singular gender neutral pronoun. We have it at the plural with they. One of our suggestions is let's switch to the plural and say they, even when you're talking about an individual animal. You might be talking about a chick in the nest, but if you don't know the sex of the chick, you could just say they are learning to fly. So that's the main thing we're asking for, is to just either say he, she, or they.
Which doesn't seem like that crazy big an ask.
Not a big ask.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I mean, Elizabeth, haven't you noticed that a lot of us, even in the animal rights movement, will say it?
Yes.
It's hard to avoid because it's so common in society. We don't do it for humans. We don't talk about humans that way. But for any wildlife or other animals, like, it's everyone says it. Not everyone, but a lot of people. So it actually, you have to train yourself to avoid it.
A lot of things on your website, you know, that need to change. It's so much as habit that we've done for our whole lives, right? And this is a big one.
Yeah.
The it thing. And you do need to train yourselves. But if you started seeing it in the media, you know, not it being used in the media.
Right. That's really the whole premise of the whole Animals and Media site, is that media is so influential to our culture and our cultural values and what becomes normal, that if all the journalists started talking about, a pig escaped from the truck on the way to slaughter, he or she is now running around in the woods and we're trying to capture him or her, that would make a big difference. And also, I think when you say him or her or they, you understand that's someone. That's another thing we ask in Animals and Media, is to use someone or somebody, but don't say something. And we ask also to use the pronoun who instead of that or which, like, you know, animals who, blah, blah, yes. blah. Just some of the courtesies we give to the human animal as sentient beings should be extended to other animals, because it's actually accurate to do that. This is actually just the truth, that they tend to be gendered beings, or even if they were intersex and in some senses some animals might be, or just, you know, as some humans are intersex or gender binary, non-binary, then they maybe should be that's probably the best route to go, would be saying they.
And not only is it respectful, but when you say the pig escaped from slaughter and they caught her, all of a sudden she
yes.
becomes a her.
Yes.
Then it becomes a sentient being versus a sausage. Right?
Yeah, like they caught it and now it is on your plate.
Yeah. And so if you're reading that, and if you eat meat or you haven't really thought about it, those kind of things, it starts to just, it's little bits, little seeds. And they're not like, you know, secretive seeds. It's just seeds of, hey, this is a sentient being. It came from somewhere. It didn't just end up in the grocery store.
And like, think about another thing on our animalsandmedia.org list is words that are industry terms. We wanted journalists and documentarians to understand that they were using a biased term. If you say poultry, if you say pork, if you say livestock and seafood, that's not a neutral term. I know it seems like it because it's so normalized, but I mean, the word livestock, living stock, that just objectifies animals. And I mean, obviously seafood, if that's how we refer to marine animals, is they're just food that lives in the sea for us. I mean, that's a problem. What we're asking journalists is actually then to just say the species name, just say salmon or cows or pigs or geese or ducks, rather than using some kind of industry terminology that lumps them all together as an object while they're still alive. If you're poultry, you're like already in our mind, you're on someone's plate, even though you're walking around. We see that just as a neutral, accurate term, say, just to say the species name. We also introduced the concept that I think is becoming more popular of putting a verb in the description of an animal, so that, like, you're not just saying someone is a farm animal, you're saying they're a farmed animal. Just like you're saying, like, they're not a lab rat, they're a rat who is being used in the biomedical field as a research subject. I've, for many years, used the term farmed animals to put that verb in there. Like, they didn't choose to be farmed. Like, they are not a farm animal. They're somebody who we bred them to farm them, but that's not who they are. I think are becoming more conscious now to not, even within the human realm of labeling, not to say someone like was a slave, but they were enslaved. because that's not, they never were a slave. That's not who they are. That's what somebody did to them unfairly. So I feel like it, to make it a verb brings in the injustice.
Yes.
And reminds us something's being done to them, but it doesn't define them.
Yes. It's a powerful difference. And it's not a difference, I think, like many people think about, but when you hear it, it's enormous. When does this happen? When do you bring this to the AP?
I think it's going to be in early February or sometime in February that okay. we'll be delivering this to them. And I mean, I know they're going to need to, they can't just say, oh yes, right away. I'm sure they need to have a board meeting or something. So it's not about hitting the AP over the head, or it's really not a critique of them in general, but they're a leader.
Yeah.
A thought leader, an influencer in the media field. So I'm hoping that over the next year, they'll give it some consideration. I think they can update the way that other animals are discussed, especially since there's so much scientific research saying what I think should be obvious about the consciousness of other animals and how we've underestimated them greatly. And the ecological crisis we've caused with mass extinction, we have got to start taking other species seriously.
One more question. For regular everyday people who are not, you know, part of these groups, or even for people who are not in the media or journalism, what can they do in the sense of like small changes in not only the way they represent animals or talk about animals, but in bringing them more into the conversation as something to consider?
We're all just participating in a culture that really isn't of our choice. Like, we just grew up in this culture, but we can just start questioning things and just not be afraid to say that we love other animals, that they're astounding. You just have to be willing to say things that maybe other people haven't heard you say yet.
I love it.
And when they hear you say it, they are like, okay, I don't have to be a certain type of person to believe that.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing this podcast.
To learn more about Carrie, about animals and media, and the letter to the AP, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We'll have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare minute and could do us a favor, please rate and review and subscribe to Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. To support Species Unite, which we would greatly appreciate, go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening, and have a beautiful day.